zero luck. I don't have any skills or the XP to fix my film.
Hello and welcome to the National Institute for Geopolitics Review. I am DK.
I am Lewis, and Wu Long Clan ain't nothing to fuck with.
Oh, apparently, I mean, they're trying. Yeah, I was joking about the Geopolitics Review, and we will, of course,
we're doing a gamer show. Yeah,
today, we got to actually talk about video games.
We're going back to the dual format, where it's first half video game, second half geopolitics.
Sure. So, yes, big news in the gamer world is... is this, what is it, Wukong Black Myth, which has surpassed, as I understand it, all prior existing records on Steam. Interestingly, the user base appears to be overwhelmingly Chinese. The game itself is, Stars, you are an African American. No, wait, I'm being told you are some kind of gorilla monkey monster thing. I'm not really sure.
You are a trickster monkey god.
So a nigger. But not. No, I don't know. It's Journey to the West, right? And they already did a video game Journey to the West, as I understand it. Not just like Dragon Ball, but like an actual... It was Ninja Theory, right?
Well, so my take has always been that in the West, we have like three stories. Mm-hmm. The Iliad, the Odyssey, and stories for women. In the West, in the East, they have like two stories... and they're both Journey to the West. Like everything you watch from Asia, except for India, which I guess is probably its own.
India has the Ramayana, which is kind of basically almost Journey to the West, and then the Mahabharata,
Journey to the West,
which is basically the Iliad.
You've consumed Asian content. You have consumed some version. Everything is hyper influenced by Journey to the West.
Yeah.
Journey to the West is like their story, you know, in the way that the Iliad and the Odyssey are our stories.
Well, so. The Mahabharata is also, as I was saying, the Iliad kind of almost, basically. So, yeah, it's with some, like, a lot of additional kind of filler in between. That's where the stories for women are. So this is kind of like their Ur myth. Yes, very much, especially in China.
Doing the whole Ur myth. Although, notice, like, this guy does have, like, he's like a Saiyan, right? He's like a cool, powerful monkey god type guy. But Wulong also...
Wukong, I believe.
Sorry, yeah, Wukong. is it? Oh, God, jeez.
Whatever the fuck, some chink shit, I don't know.
Well, so I am somewhat confused because I did... I have attempted to play... Yeah, Black Myth Wukong. So Wulong is a phrase used constantly in Chinese media.
Yes.
Especially video games, because Wulong means crouching dragon.
Mm-hmm.
But the actual usage of the term is like somebody who is not yet known, who will have like great historical import. So like you're just some officer in some, you know, frontier, and then you come down from the mountains and you restore order and whatever. That's like what Wukong is. Wukong is big in Chinese media, so I'm getting twisted. It's Black, Wukong. Wulong is that. Wukong is this one. Different. Very different. But I have been trying to play Chinese games before this because I'm interested. I did play Wulong, which is a different game.
That's Wulong Enter the Fist, right? And I know nothing about it other than the title.
No, I played Wulong for Fallen Dynasty.
Fallen Dynasty. Okay, but it's the same series?
I don't.
Don't know. We don't even know. It's jink shit. Who fucking knows?
But they are kind of garbo.
Well, like,
that's what makes this new one different.
Yes,
is that
and there are several like kind of interest. To me, the main, I don't know. I just have so little time for video games these days, and the time that I do have tends to be consumed by Siege Baby, who's now Siege Boy, who loves Mario. So, like, you know, that's where I'm at these days. But the meta level story, as far as like Chinese developer, this is I think the real entry. Like, this is the first time that a Chinese developed game that is really just a Chinese developed game as opposed to Tencent.
Yeah, totally in-house.
This is not Tencent owning 10% of whatever studio. This is, totally in-house Chinese, you could call it domestic Chinese game development studio really making a splash.
You know what vibe I get from this? Is if you've watched like foreign films, you'll notice that like every for there are a lot of most countries don't have like LA and Hollywood, and they can't produce constant big budget, very tight, clean, like high production value movies. But they can, like, every 5 or so years, a large country like Germany or Russia or China sometimes, or Britain, they will, like, put their entire industry together and make one very, very good high-budget product.
What was it, 1917? Was it a few years back?
Yeah, the Brits did 1917. The Germans did All Quiet on the Western Front. The Russians did T-34, I believe. T-34. I've never seen the Midway film the Chinese made, but apparently it's quite good actually.
I heard that it was yes, and then the Chinese also do a bunch of like medieval Chinese epics, huge set pieces and stuff.
And this I think is analogous because the Chinese game industry is not at AAA level. This is them,
right? I don't think
they're going to be consistent. You won't get one excellent Chinese product every year, but four to six years. Imagine.
Probably. Well, and the interesting thing is, I think probably on analogy with BAFTA, because the British, what is it? British Arts Film Television Association has a video game category, and the British government is, okay, the output is somewhat inconsistent, but for example, we talked, I think, before about Hellblade, Senua's Sacrifice was a like BAFTA affiliated.
I tried to play it.
Tried to play the second one. Did you try to play the first one?
No, I tried to play the first one.
Oh, okay,
one,
it sucks
one.
Too.
I'm going to try to play the
unsurprising,
second one.
Unsurprising, yeah.
Sucks. It has a really good combat system. It's very simple.
Mm-hmm.
And then the worst puzzles of all time. The worst, most obscure, stupid, like, you don't feel smart when you solve it. Ugh, what a. The combat system is very good. It's very snappy.
Well, as I understand it, these are the people who did Devil May Cry. Is that right? I believe so. Or they've had Devil May Cry for a while.
I think so. Yeah. But it's
so it makes sense, right?
But it's more puzzles than fights. The fights are like the best part of it, and they're very short and they're very high stakes too. Because if you lose too many fights in the game, you just get you just have to restart the game. Your save gets deleted, which is cool. But it's all. Puzzles where you can't die, so it's like fuck this.
Okay, well, so good to know. But regardless, I think the point is that the British government is involved. Like they are actively involved in the game development process. They have favored projects that they treat favorably in all sorts of ways, and it seems that the Chinese. We know that they're like aware of Gamer Race. They have in the past oppressed Gamer Race in ways that I think Gamer Race should be. I mean, you know, we don't want high school kids and middle school kids or in grade school kids staying up all night playing World of Warcraft. Like that's a social.
They're also
problem,
the Chinese
right?
government or Chinese companies that are kind of into the government are willing to spend money, like in a way that only the West really matches. For instance, Genshin Impact. Which makes it's the most profitable video game of all time, I think, at this point. They spend like $200 million a year in just keeping that game going and new content and like continued development for an existing game, which is something that is always promised in the West when you buy like this game. Oh, it'll run forever and, you know, have developers on it constantly, but actually ends up with like, you know, a team of 10 maybe if you're lucky. Whereas the Chinese are willing to burn money on like projects, you know, I think this seems like it's a bit of a prestige thing.
Well, I was going to say, it's very much of a part with the, like, you know, the state understanding, like, prestige projects and cultural, like, the, you know, like in Civilization, if you're pursuing a culture victory, you spend money to spread your culture, right? Like, it's not like a profit center. That's not why you're doing it.
It is funny that this is all downstream of Kung Fu Panda. Are you familiar with this lore?
No. They were so pissed off by it, they were like, fuck this.
No, better. Kung Fu Panda came out and they were and it was like the most Chinese. It's a movie about a panda that does kung fu, right? And the Chinese fucking went wild for it and they loved it, and their cultural ministry had like a I don't know like an admission of humiliation that why didn't we think of this, like like they were like, this is so perfectly what we do,
right? We should have done this ages
we should
ago,
have done yes. this we don't yeah. have our enough internal like cultural production to do these things. Like they consider like a mark of. They consider it like they enjoy the product, but they consider it a mark of like abject cult, like the Ministry of Culture. Sure. It's like we were abjectly humiliated that we didn't create this product, like that the West did this for us. Is like a, you know, they were just humiliated. So they because of this, they've really juiced their movie industry internally. Because for before this incident, they were relatively not dependent, I don't say dependent, but like Western films were huge in China. And the Chinese were like, okay, well, they would just censor them for, or not accept them for their audiences. And they were cool with like that status quo of these, we will take Western films, we will, you know, edit or censor them. And this is fine. This is part of our, we don't need to actually create our own stuff as much. They wanted to do documentaries like Kung Fu Guys, you know, they wanted to do historicals, but they're like, okay, no, we need to do modern stuff. And this is, I think, very downstream of that movement of like, we're going to spend money, we're going to make stuff for ourselves. And it's, I think it's going to go pretty good. Like, also the Japanese, the way that the Americans fill the gap with cinema, the Japanese filled the gap in China with video games. Like a lot of the historicals, like Wulong Fallen Dynasty, I think is a joint Japanese-Chinese project that I was talking about. It's like the Japanese are willing to sell to China, obviously, in very similar cultural for a lot of reasons. So
all of this is, I think, general backdrop to, I guess, so the timeline here, which I didn't realize this story had been developing for a while. There was an IGN...
4,000 years, right? Sorry.
I didn't. No, that's very good. Very, very good. November 20th, 2023. So more than half a year ago, closer to a year ago, and quite some distance from launch, there's an article by Rebecca Valentine and Ki-hoon Chan. So I could be making this up. I believe Rebecca Valentine's a Jew. She spells it R-E-B-E-K-A-H, and she has severe Jew face.
Chan also sounds Vietnamese, right? That's a...
Ki-hoon Chan sounds Korean to me, but this Borzoi's...
Ki-hoon is... Yeah.
Borzoi's yeah, you're the expert right. on gook shit.
It sounds not Chinese. We'll give it that.
Right. Yes, exactly. In any case, they had this like expose on... Game Science is the name of the developer.
God, that's a Chinese ass name. Holy right? shit, that's so good. that's so good.
Hangzhou based again. I don't know. I don't have any Chinese. I don't know. I know some like characters. I don't have any.
I think I know Hangzhou. That city. I think is like their kind of Silicon Valley.
Sure, I've heard of the city before.
Yeah.
Anyway, and any Chinese, you know, Mandarin Wallahs in the audience, I'm sure, like tearing their hair out. But please, you know, feel free to correct our pronunciation in the notes or email us at niggertalk@protonmail.com. Yes.
Dot me.
Proton.me. Niggertalk. NIGRTALK at proton.me. So one of the co-founders, Feng Ji, but I know enough to know Feng is pronounced Feng, has an outsized presence within the games industry with a penchant for sharing introspective highlights on game development, peppered with crude metaphors and boorish innuendos. In 2007, he penned a lengthy article titled "Who Has Murdered Our Game?" where he delved into the difficulties of game development in China. He then brought up this analogy, quote, "Is it because the sperm isn't virile enough? Is the pregnancy too short? Is the baby lacking nutrition? Are the doctors in charge of cesarean sections lowly skilled? Why can't we produce a healthy child?" In parentheses, quiet. Then there's the Weibo post, that's like Chinese Facebook, that garnered significant backlash. Soon after the pre-alpha video for Black Myth Wukong was released in August 2020, Feng penned his thoughts about the video going viral. The post was largely about his self-criticism over the video's lackluster production quality, with Feng stating, quote, "The 13-minute B1 looks like it was carelessly pieced together, and frame rates of 100,000 heavenly soldiers have dropped so hard that they have caused PTSD. Quote, "I want to expand my circle and hire more people, get licked until I can't get an erection." Several lines down, he also added, "I know you just happen to be a little depressed. It is my honor to provide you with some comfort in the lower half of your body." He later doubled down with a separate comment, saying, quote, "I got wet after watching it a couple of times. The pressure in my crotch is immense." Now, as I understand it, there's been some, like, disagreement over just how accurately these quotes have been translated.
Also how crude they are.
Yeah.
Like culture, things like for instance, saying cunt in Australia means less than saying cunt in America, right? Like there are cultural crudity levels that don't necessarily translate, even when it's the same word, you know? Like, I don't, I just think like, okay, let's say he's like the Mark Cuban of video games in China. He's not going to be saying like, you know, suck my dick or I'm going to suck your dick because my game's good. Like, that's not like, it's just what a weird, like, I can't imagine this is as controversial because the Chinese government would shut his ass down. Like, if you were saying like, my video game is like getting your dick sucked a lot.
I don't think that's what he's saying.
No, he's not. But I'm saying, like, if this was as crude as IGN is portraying it, the Chinese government would, like, they would like be like, shut up, dude. Like, you know, shut the fuck up.
And yeah, not, if you were just being crude for the sake of being crude, this more specific allegations focus on sexism, a lot of which has to do with a so-called toxic work environment. There's one thing that this IGN expose mentions that's not about game science, and it's a different developer called Duoyi Games, whatever the fuck, developer of Gunfire Reborn, which I've never heard of. At one point, its CEO, Zhu Bo, laid off 11 female employees as part of an internal investigation, with one anonymous employee alleging that Zhu Bo shared in a board meeting. So an anonymous accusation from a board meeting. So whatever, you know, jerk off hand motion here. But he apparently supposedly said that he, quote, didn't want another feminist bitch in the company, which, like, who the fuck does? Like, please. Like, you are proving him right by doing this. Anyway, it's all a bunch of fluff and nonsense, but it resurfaced is the word that they use in media. This IGN article, when the game actually came out, to, I guess, PC Gamer had it at 87%, called it the best Souls-like since Elden Ring, and if Elden Ring scared you off, play this instead, was their headline today.
The way it looks, I haven't played it yet, I will attempt to at some point, but it looks like it's kind of splitting the difference between your modern God of War and Elden Ring. It's a little less brutal, right? A little more action gamey, but still very like FromSoft inspired in a lot of the ways. Also, the narrative of the Journey to the West, or specifically this character, I can't remember his name. It's the one with the monkey tail. It's the trickster guy or whatever. It's a very Dark Soulsian tale. Like the myth, I mean, like not like the actual. I don't know how the game goes. I'm sure it is because you're fighting all the gods. It's very God of War-y. Like you're fighting all the Chinese gods and in the heavenly realms or whatever. But the story itself is very Dark Souls-y because it's all about, like, the reason it's so, Journey to the West is so impactful in Chinese and Asian culture broadly is that it is basically compliant with all three major, I guess four if you count, like, Shintoism and, like, pagan stuff, but of Taoism, Confucianism, and Buddhism, it's, like, hyper-compliant with all of them. It's about, like, getting bored and being violent and that being bad, but also being like part of human nature. There's like, it's about dissatisfaction fundamentally in a lot of ways. In one
cool.
More,
so yeah, right? Very Buddhist, as in keeping with,
yeah.
You know,
and also Confucius, like not knowing your place, right. And yeah. all these things and
good moral messages. Well, we can't have
harmony.
That.
Yeah. But also, but it's not like also like a fun vibes. Like, sorry, it is like a, yeah. You know, So I think it's, I think it's. I can see how you could very easily make a Souls product out of this. The narrative of this monkey god guy is that he is like an immortal trickster god who is like also kind of a warrior type and will get mad and smash things. And like his arc before Journey to the West starts, I believe, is, or maybe it's the beginning, is they are trying to keep him busy and like assign him make work jobs in heaven, and how he like fucks them up because he gets bored and such.
Yeah, he's got the monkey mind.
Yeah, he's a human, well, because the monkey, the implication of obviously if you realize it is like monkey, the monkey aspect of these gods is the human aspect, yes. Right? It's like the fallen, yes. You know, and also all these things. And, but in many ways, the monkey is wiser and blah, blah, blah. But yeah, you can see how this would be it's very FromSoft.
I'm curious to play it. I mean, I don't know. I don't know if or when I'll have the time for it, but yeah, it seems... Well, okay, so, and on the player numbers bit, because that was a sort of funny sort of side story, I guess, with all this stuff going on, was because it's so overwhelmingly popular in China, something... So the total player base concurrent was something just under 3 million. when it turned to nighttime in China, it fell by about 2 million into the 100,000s.
Yeah. But that's also like 3 million is insane.
Well, that's completely nuts. Actually, even just a couple hundred thousand. I mean, that was the I believe at its peak right after launch, Helldivers 2 had like 200,000-300,000 concurrent, right? This is all concurrent. So 3 million concurrent is just nuts. But yeah, it was like 2.5 million of those were concurrent in China.
Now, I will say there was some deal, because I've heard of people who had some kind of NVIDIA thing, like membership, or probably there were some free games sent out with some kind of program.
Oh, I'm sure, but yeah. Yeah, I mean, how many is that?
But still.
Yeah.
You know.
But the point I was making was there were the trannies on Twitter, formerly known as X, were all a Twitter with themselves. They were like, oh, look, it's already failing. It's failing. It just dropped off right away. It's like, no, you fucking retarded trannies. It's nighttime in China. And of course, as soon as it was morning hours in China again, the player numbers shot right up. But there was a very, very brief window because they were so mad. They were so... I learned about this game literally... Like, at first, I saw the... I guess my first thing was I saw the review front page on PC Gamer. I was like, oh, that looks interesting, whatever. Okay, new Souls-like, highly regarded, not just kind of knockoff. That's, you know, good to see. Seems interesting. Journey to the West, oh, that's cool. Chinese developer, all right. And then... But I kind of just, like, filed under, you know, Souls-like, I'm probably never going to play. And then... I saw just the absolute butthurt on Twitter and just like the trannies seething and coping and dilating. I was like, holy shit, they are so mad. And yeah, and then it's just, they've been mad. They've been mad ever since. We're going on a week now almost, and they're still seething.
Well, that's their eternal problem, is they can't control the market, right? Like It's not quite go broke. It's not. I think go woke, go broke is dumb and wrong in a lot of ways, because that's not how economics work. But if you go like based, you will make money to some degree. It just is, right? I think people say, oh, these companies will fall if they don't get based. No, they can just, you can be shitty for a long time and do shit product, but you can make a lot of money by doing base shit.
Right, or just not tranny shit. I mean, that's the thing I think fundamentally is, like, they were talking about on TDS the other day, and Sven was raising the question of, is it bad because it has all, like, niggers and faggots everywhere? Or is it bad and then they also add niggers and faggots and make it worse or something? And the answer is yes, because it's the development, just like, I mean, game development is essentially a collaborative writing process, and any writing process is extremely multifaceted. There's just a lot that goes into it, especially making anything high quality. And the if you think of it, I guess, as like a big river, right? And the end product is like the delta at the bottom of the river, feeding out into the ocean. All of the tributaries, all of the things that go into the process, you need, you know, if it's all shitty water, then you're going to get shitty water where the river meets.
Are you saying
the sea.
That you're pissing into the tributaries of piss?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Exactly. Yeah. And like when all the tributaries are piss and shit, like, yes, you're going to get piss and shit at the other end, right? So like it's the process itself is what's rotten. And when you don't do that, when you just allow the river to flow naturally from the glaciers down to the sea, then you get nice, cool, clean, fresh water that you can drink, and it's delicious. And that's, I think, I don't know, that may be an overblown metaphor, but yeah. I feel like it makes sense.
Yeah. Can I do some racism?
Yeah, absolutely.
I think the current state of AAA games is perfect for the Chinese mindset to develop in, because there's not really, like, we're not in, like, John Carmack innovation world anymore, right? Maybe we will go back to that in the future.
Well, the math problems are solved for the most. I mean, we have enough compute.
Currently, the issues are, we know what works. It's a man hours and base skill question, right? And labor costs. And the Chinese are very good at all three of the high base talent in their artists, their VFX, all their... Their programmers are.
I mean, you
good
can
enough.
Imagine the autism that goes into, like, if you've ever seen detailed painting on a Chinese vase, like that level of autism just applied to video games, right?
Yeah, it suited very well to the current, like, it's basically a man hours war, effectively. And the Chinese are not going to, A, they're cheaper man hours. They're not going to waste them on Troons and Blags and Whammon. It's going to be all Asian guys, of course. And, like, there's no reason they shouldn't eat everybody's lunch once they get their base talent higher. Because the innovation is basically dead right now, outside of some indie stuff. And maybe the Chinese indie scene won't be as cool and innovative, but, like, there's no reason they shouldn't, like, in the next 10 years, like, stomp the yard in terms of AAA stuff. Especially if they do more joint stuff with Japan, which seems to be... This is a particularly national product, but generally the Chinese industry is pretty overlappy. Like, you get a couple Japanese creatives in there, maybe. You can really, like... I think you could possibly see one of these companies buy Nintendo in the future, and it'd be much more acceptable than, like, Microsoft doing it culturally.
Oh, I don't think Nintendo will ever sell, but if they were to, I could see them much more easily selling yes to a Chinese than an American company.
Yeah, I don't think that's either. I'm saying, likelihood. The Microsoft purchases Nintendo thing is probably never gonna happen. But like, if one of these companies gets big, or what's the Genshin Impact company called? I forget. They might like they have the juice and the understanding of, you know, what how to deal with things. That although I don't know. Japanese do hate the Chinese.
Yeah, that's the main thing, and Nintendo is really...
The cultural similarities are weird. It's like it's like a common ancestor thing, a little bit, you know? But they don't actually like them personally. It's weird. They respect China, but they don't like the Chinese, so who knows? But they do work with them a good bit, especially in the video game space. In the same way Chinese effects teams do. Like, also, the Chinese are willing to give you garbage. Like, a lot of the
FX. All the Marvel shit, all the Cape shit.
It's all India and China, and the Chinese are just like, they're phoning that shit in. They don't give a fuck. Yeah. Like, Marvel shit looks like garbage.
Who cares?
CG wise, because the Chinese don't give a fuck, and the Indians can't do well. So.
Oh, poor India. Yes. Anyway, did you want to talk about anything you were playing before we move on, or do you want to move on?
What's our time? What's our time looking like?
I think we should move on soon, but if you want to just...
Okay, quickly. I've been playing a lot of video games. I do want to highlight one game that I didn't like, but I think is good, called, maybe for the audience especially, it's called Another Crab's Treasure. It is a Souls-like
for kids.
Oh,
I heard about this. Yes, I heard about this. And you didn't like it, but it was good.
I was not in a Souls game mindset when I played it, and I kind of found it frustrating, but I could see it's frustrating the same way a Souls game is frustrating. With
but
slightly
like,
better.
If you're like a baby, like a kid who was like 8 or 9 could play it.
Yes, yes. It's like the Mario Rabbids is XCOM. This is FromSoft.
Super cool. That sounds awesome. Yeah.
That was good. I of course played. Maybe we'll talk about an episode. I played the Far Cry DLC that takes place after like the post apocalypse.
Oh, how was that?
The villains are black.
Nice.
Black women, and like they're just like villainous and evil and impulsive and violent. It's really, I was like, what? Like, huh? And like they murder like a competent white guy who like builds water filtration systems in the post-apocalypse, and they just murder him. It's like, god damn, what's the message here, guys? Like, but you know, whatever. But there's a lot. I really do enjoy like the way Fallout plays and stuff. It's post-apocalyptic Far Cry, post-apocalypse, not Fallout.
Which one is that? Which game is that?
The Far Cry post-apocalypse one.
Which one?
Five DLC. It's called,
five DLC is post, and it's not set in the same. Is it set in the? Is it
same
set
map after the nukes fall?
Got it.
Gotcha.
Okay, cool. So it's like Fallout, but Far Cry. That does sound fun.
Yeah, no, it's got good vibes. They also simplify things. There's a lot going on there. I think we need not an episode, but we're not short on time. I'm just going to give the rundown of things I enjoyed. But I don't want to list every game I just bounced off, though, to some degree. So those are the games I enjoyed. I can give you a list of games I hate at a later date. you want to continue on to the geopolitics angle?
Cause yeah, let's do it.
We owe people is a bit of a. I mean, if you've only listened to this show, you know, I've done tons of Israel content on the main TRS site, but it's all kind of behind the paywall or all these things. But it seems like there is a deal in place now, or more of a deal, and I think it is I brought this theory up to Mike earlier. I think he's liked it. Is that Hamas is doing a bit of trolling when they do this stuff, or like they are being offered crap deals by the Israelis, and they're just saying yes. Like, things that They are currently saying yes to like a continued Israeli military presence in Gaza, in the Gaza Strip, something they clearly don't want and really can't accept. But the fact is that the Israel can't say yes to this because for a lot of reasons. One is that like Israel can't, Israel's in a weird spot where they can't retreat from the Gaza Strip, right? If there's a peace deal where they're allowed to keep their troops in place inside the Strip, which would be a win, quote unquote, from the previous war, that's kind of a poison pill, which means they have to maintain their troops inside the Gaza Strip. You're like the thing is, Israel like
yeah, so it's not needs, yeah, so, they so, need to so stay Hamas on the war like, footing. Yeah, even if they're never going to accept this, and ideally it's not that they want the Israeli Defense Forces in the Gaza Strip, but if whatever, you know, sequence of events happens where that's the outcome, then okay, great. Now we just get to attack them in the Gaza Strip.
Yes. So the Jews are in a rough and weird spot there, where also effectively any deal is effectively, this is one thing Israel really hates, and it is true. Any deal with Hamas effectively is like the recognition of Hamas, right? So if there's a ceasefire.
Yeah, there have been all sorts of like.
Hamas has to walk around out in public, yes, again. You know?
I'm sure that's part of why they assassinated Hania as well, is because all of this stuff has to do, like, we don't meet with you, we meet with delegates that you send at a hotel in Dubai or whatever, but we're not actually like talking to the organization per se, because you're just a terrorist criminal from our perspective.
Yes, which is
dumb. Is retarded, but that's the...
Well, terrorism also doesn't exist. I think that's yes. Terrorism is not actually a real thing. It's just guerrilla warfare. Mm-hmm. Terrorism was a word made up in the Cold War to describe rebels you don't like, right? Always has been. It's just rebels I don't like. Some actions are more atrocity-y than others that those groups do, but like what a terrorist is frankly bullshit. Like it's not a real thing. Everyone's a terrorist or a rebel or a soldier. These are all, there is no identity of terrorist. The way the FBI, have you ever seen, looked at terrorism research and how the FBI defines it?
Only as it impact, like, because I know that they essentially define white advocates as terrorists and their spectrum or whatever, but
So the definition of terrorism is very funny. It is anyone doing a violent action to induce people to cause political change.
Oh, I saw it. Yes, I was. Yes.
Which
I
is so.
Yeah, right.
Which means the entire United States Army is a terrorist, right? Like, when you invade a country, you're doing terror. Like, you know, it's such a broad, like,
right.
Anyone gets hurt and anyone gets scared, it's terrorism, right? Like, so in theory, this is good. If you arrest a nigger rapist, right? You are like doing political change by like spreading fear in that community, right? That like they won't be able to rape.
So the like, cops are terrorists, you know, is what you're saying.
Yes. Like, you know, it's extremely funny. Like, because I think they wanted to include like Emmett Till as terrorism.
Right.
But
right,
the impression of the thing is like, you know, oof.
Yeah.
I have a new Emmett Till take, by the way. I really think Emmett Till is the foundation of like American morality and like the American Empire's morality.
Yeah, I think that's probably fair.
And the foundational, like the foundational myth of American morality, much like Adam and Eve or Jesus Christ and the crucifixion and the resurrection, is that no black teenager should fear to forcibly stick his fingers in the vagina of a white mother. And if he has any fear as he does that, the society has failed.
Thanks for that. That's very.
But that's what the society is. That's why I really hate America, bro. Like, yeah. That's why Trump doesn't really move me. You know, like, I'm sorry. Mm-hmm. Trump likes Emmett. Trump is an Emmett Till injury appreciator, and I'm not. You know, I'm an Emmett Till hater. Sorry.
Yeah. So. I was just trying to.
Iraq. Yeah.
Yes.
Iran.
Well, Iraq is, I mean, popping off a bit too. That's, I think, part of the story here.
Well, every resistance member from Iraq, Lebanon, Iran, and Yemen all have been in the recent month or two had like extremely offensive things done to them by the Israelis, yes. In a seemingly intentional manner, right? They assassinated effectively the he's older, maybe he was retired, semi-retired, but also maybe not, the commander of Hezbollah in Lebanon. Like, he was their top general. They struck at the port, a port in Yemen that had like some oil storage facility.
Oh yeah, yeah.
They've killed some Iran. The Jews and the Americans have struck some PMF guy or some Hezbollah in an Iraq guys, and of course Sinwar was killed, or not Sinwar, Ismail Haniyeh was killed in Iran, and you know the. So I think there is clearly something going on, and the Iranians in their like infinite, you know, conservatism, you know, or I actually thought that the Iranian government is actually like what the based NRX Ernst Younger posters want. It truly is like the
yes, no, that's the a very
revolutionary.
Good point.
It's a revolutionary conservative
the
government.
The only thing I will say is I don't have any. Like, I just don't. This thing about like, oh, what are they gonna do? Like, you know, just you know. Some memes about like, oh, I hope you enjoyed the nothing happening. Sit back and enjoy the nothing still happening with like one of the Ayatollahs in it, right? I'm sorry, I just like don't have like that's just extreme high time preference brain, and I like
it gets weird. Like, it's so I would have preferred a response within 2 weeks of the assassination,
yes, sure,
because the. It means the retaliation is light. Like if you do something in the Snowden system, if you retaliate, inherently, like, you are more shielded, right? Whereas if they attack now or in the next month or two or two months, whatever they do, the political, it gives the Jews and Americans more political cover.
But I get what you're saying, but my counter to that, and this is why, I guess the way I'm looking at it is, Iran will retaliate. That is not in question. When they retaliate, it will be more severe than the previous retaliation, you know, with the drone strikes and everything. It will be at a time and a place of their choosing. I love your idea of striking Israeli military outposts in Israel, in like occupied Palestine. I think that's a great choice of target. We'll see, I guess. My thing is, the way that I'm looking at it is more ultimately in terms of in a way, actually, very similarly structurally to Russia and Ukraine with the Kursk offensive. Russia could crush the Kursk offensive. They could have crushed. I mean, they had an element of surprise. They quickly rotated in exploitation elements that were probably already waiting in the wings and have expanded their bridgehead. But it's all kind of bullshit. And if Russia really wanted to, they could shut it down at any point. They don't really care because it's like, okay, it's the strategic rear, but there's no actual valuable strategic assets there other than maybe the nuclear power plant. They're not going to get anywhere near the city of Kursk itself. They're not going to get anywhere near the power plant. So the rest of it is just kind of whatever. It's a, you know, it's a thorn in our side, but it's nothing like, it's just, I mean, if you're fighting like a duel with swords and there's like a thorn that's in your side, like who cares, right? The real thing going on there, and Russia has said this, they've said it overtly, is they said, look, we had been willing to talk peace terms along certain lines, including essentially unilateral and preemptive winding down of attacks on energy facilities, because that, you know, okay, we're now in late summer, soon it's going to be really late summer heading into fall, and then the Ukrainian energy crisis, which is not gotten any better. It's just like the weather's nice, so it doesn't really matter as much. Then there's really going to start being a crunch. And that was part of the negotiations with Russia had been, look, you know, you don't need to attack our oil storage facilities. We don't need to attack your power generation and transmission facilities. And maybe we can like work towards some kind of peace deal potentially. Because again, very much like Iran, you know, the Russian government is essentially Buchananite. That's now all off the table. That is all 100% just gone. Like, that, forget it. Like, that's just never, ever going to happen. It's been removed. What the Kursk offensive signals, correct, the message that they are correctly interpreting from that is As if they needed it, which they didn't, but now they really, really, now even the softliners will be satisfied that there simply is no negotiating with Jews. There is no negotiating with Zog. There is no negotiating with the United States or the United Kingdom or, you know, any of the tentacles of global Jewry. It's just simply out of the question. There's nothing to be gained. They will instantly backtrack the second it's, you know, momentarily advantageous for them to do so. And that is exactly the lesson I think that the Iranians have learned, and why ultimately I am just unconcerned with. Yes, it would have been nice, ideally, if they had, you know, sent a quick, short, sharp message. I have no doubt that such a message is in the offing. The issue is like the. I think ultimately I interpret, and maybe you could call this cope if you want. I think that's short-sighted. It's not cope. It's just looking at it as what the Iranians have now learned, what everybody in the region has now learned, is they're like. You cannot negotiate with Jews. You know, like, Judaism is terrorism. Like, and this whole meme about we don't negotiate with terrorists, like, no, we don't negotiate with Jews. There's no point to even attempting to negotiate with Jews. So all this other stuff is just, like, whatever. It's a question of...
I do appreciate Hamas as effectively bad. It's not actually bad faith. It's good faith. But, like...
Yeah.
But, like, okay, sure. Yeah. We'll take whatever, like, horrifying deal the Jews are offering them, they will just like, okay, fine, whatever. And then like
the and then
Jews
send it back to the Knesset where the insane bloodthirsty Jews would be like, what are you
Yeah. But I also I have a really contrarian Ukraine take. Everyone to get out of the way real quick.
Yeah.
On the now that the Ukrainians are control part of it, it's Kyrgyzstania now. That's the Ukrainian word for it. As they control territory in it, they get to call
They called it the Chinya region?
Kyrgyzstania.
They have
not Kursk.
Okay, whatever. Fine. Sure.
Yeah. That's that. Well, like, it's like their Bakhmut word. Like, it's now it's Artyomysk,
okay,
whatever.
Artyomysk, yeah.
Oh, yeah. So we call things by who controls them. That's the rule. but this is a very contrarian take, is that the Ukrainians might man for man just be better fighters, because the brigade that actually ended up stopping or has, like, put a good dent into the Kyrgyzstania offensive, the Russian brigade, is the 810 Marine Separate Brigade. Do you know what the origin of this brigade is?
I'm just going to guess Odessa because of the lead up.
No, it's very famous. It was the Ukrainian Marine Brigade that split in two in Crimea when Crimea was taken.
Yeah.
Half of them became this Russian brigade, and half of them became the Ukrainian Marines who fought in Mariupol.
Now that's pottery.
This is a Ukraine.
That is pure pottery. Yes.
So here come the Ukrainians, the actual good soldiers, and we do a bit of trolling.
That's really funny. I mean, whatever. Like, you know what? I'm sure that certainly your NATO equipped and trained mode nigga Ukrainian brigade is superior to your pre-war Russian territorial defense. Whatever, like that, sure, like that doesn't surprise me at all. And I think the course of the war has borne that comparison out as a general matter.
Also, I do think that the 810 has been doing God's work over there, but they are not enough. They're what they're doing is like setting up ambushes in towns.
Mm-hmm.
And when the Ukrainians run, they're doing actually very similar to what they do in Gaza, actually, where they're doing like zero distance, like you all hide, the vehicles are hidden, it's just light infantry in the town with RPGs and such, the convoy is running into the town, it's like eight vehicles, they get nailed at short range with RPGs, and the ones that fall back, then the BTRs come out of cover, you know, as the Ukrainians are falling back and like stop them. And they've wiped out at least two like companies in this manner pretty handily, like decisively, but that's not... They're not doing like fortified. Like they do this and they leave to the next town and they try to keep they're trying to slow the Ukrainians and keep them guessing so they can't advance as fast. But there is, it seems, still like a bit of a shortage of like troops to actually like firm up that line still.
They
have is spec ops guys, and that's how
those
you
are the guys that are actually it's I think to me it's clear that the spec ops guys are and Wagner and Akhmat, there's you know, heavy shock troops are the ones actually stopping the advance. It seems that the Russian regulars, or I'm actually not clear on whether there are regulars, so to proper regulars in between that would fit on an org chart or an order of battle in between territorial defense and special forces. I just don't. I mean, part of it is I don't know, but I also, I mean, I, you know, haven't seen really so much of just regular Russian army units doing much. No,
it's
of
all
anything
it's there. All we, it's all weird. It's all weird stuff.
Yeah. So I don't know to what extent they're even really in the fight. I if I'm Russian command, I just don't take this seriously. I take this as a bad attempt at distracting my attention as the situation continues to deteriorate, essentially exponentially, on the Eastern Front. So as long as it's contained, like, sure, let them have, like, bunghole farmland in the middle of fucking nowhere. Like, who gives a shit?
Yeah, but there's also, like, the thing is other, there's other border detachment. Like, the fear, I think, currently is that they could go east or west. Not that they could go, like, to important individual site, but that...
But east or west to what? To more, like, empty forest?
So
I mean...
Yes, because so there are on... Along the Russian-Ukrainian border, there are several thousand troops, you know, by more north in Smolny and all these places. Like, if they go west, they would be pinning troops between the Ukrainian
border.
Oh,
no, that's with the river thing. Nah, that's bullshit.
That's no further west. I wish we had a map up. There's a legitimate threat that there's about 5,000-ish soldiers that could have to fall back from, like, their defense positions on the border if they go further west. That's the river's more of a northerly thing. I'm not worried of that. I'm worried like
maybe. Look, I guess I again to me this whole thing is just sort of because okay, spin this out. Like, yes, it would be a disaster if 5,000 troops were killed or taken prisoner. But that's just not going to happen. Like, it's just not.
They would just fall back,
and maybe with some like quote unquote heavy casualties for that kind of a situation. But it's just they're not going to be encircled. They're not going to be destroyed. They're not going to be captured. It's just not going to happen. Same on the Ukrainian side. I mean, like if they overextend, which I think that's the real danger for the Ukrainians is overextension. Then there might be, but even that's really just not, it's just not going to happen. Once their positions are suitably threatened, the Ukrainians will just withdraw back across the border, whether that takes, you know, weeks or months or however long. It's just like, they're not going to be surrounded and encircled and captured. It's just not going to happen on either side. That being the case, there's like, I just find it hard to care. Like, one of our buddies was asking me, like, oh, what do you think about this, like, Kalinovo or whatever the name of the town is? I was like, it don't matter. Like, it just doesn't fuck. Like, none of this matters.
Also, you see your highway got cut by Petrovsk?
Yes. E-40 or whatever? Yep. E-50. E-50 is now cut. And so Konstantinovka is in very much like a very bad situation. They're advancing a little further south in Ugledar. Yeah, it's just it's all over the map in the east, especially towards Pokrovsk, but not exclusively. It'll take some time still, of course, but yeah, I mean the thing is with the now full, complete, confirmed capture of New York. Which I don't know what the Russian name is now. I don't believe it's New York. It's something else. I think we could see and who knows, but I think so far the evidence is bearing out my thesis from before that while yes, you can always get dudes with shovels digging trenches, actual built up fortifications take time and the longer you have, the better they are. And these are the last, essentially, of the most built up since 2014. I'm sure there are some stuff they've been working on, maybe you know, just by definition, not quite as long. But the further west you go, the less built up the fortifications are going to be, the less concrete will have been poured, the less steel will be reinforcing, etc. And that plus the fabs, which are uninterrupted, And that's the other thing is the F-16s that we haven't really talked about are now.
Challenger's finally got hit.
Challenger has been blown up. Yep. Challenger turns out to be the there's a bit tank of a troll take, but it seems like de facto the worst tank of the war. Is that I think that's a fair assessment. It's the heaviest.
Then they've done no cool things.
Zero
cringe thing. Like, only cringe.
Yeah, only cringe from Challengers. Worst tank of the war by far. And so yeah, they haven't done anything. The F-16s, now they were up front about.
There's like three of them, right? Or three pilots and six pilots, something
like that. Yeah, and they were saying they were only going to be used for air defense. Well, no noticeable impact. I mean, if they were supposed to,
they're
stop
probably
them,
in the.
I'm sure they're in the west by Lviv.
Kyiv or Lviv. They freed up more MiGs to go die.
Yeah,
you know, many such cases.
Exactly. Right. Yes, and one of their senior pilots just got blown up like a couple days ago. One of their MiG pilots with long combat record, KIA. So yeah, it's on the Ukrainian side. So like they're just again the sort of like what it doesn't like the reason that the Kursk offensive doesn't matter is because not like the whole like okay there are things that can be done and there's unfortunately many more people that are going to have to die, but the whole thing was just a complete waste, complete unnecessary. Like the outcome was never in question unless you were fully bought in libtard, essentially. Because even the conservatards don't like the conservatards, to their credit, okay, they want to focus on China, which is retarded, but with the Russia Ukraine stuff, they're like, yeah, I don't care. So good, that's good. That's the right attitude, mm-hmm. generally.
Also, I had a take about a baseline soldier quality that applies more to Gaza, but so one of the narratives I'm seeing coming out more and more in Gaza is that Hamas has a recruiting pipeline set up, because of course they do, right? Like, of course there's a Hamas has a recruiting pipeline set up.
Yeah. Hey, did the Jews murder your whole family? Come join Hamas.
Like, yes. because there's this weird thing where it's, I don't know how true. It may not. I'm sure they have one, but the narrative is that Hamas has managed to rebuild most, like the mass majority of Hamas brigades are operating at 90%+ full strength.
But we pre-war. Never did. You see them get destroyed? Like people kept talking about, oh, we've destroyed Hamas, we've destroyed Hamas. Oh, they've taken all these horrible casualties.
No, I found that. Yeah, I always found that a bit odd that they were claiming like mass, because there are no big captures or even kills. They're just grabbing any dude.
Dude, grabbing dudes off the street and blowing up civilian houses. Like, yes, there will be some Hamas that are caught up in that, but that's not defeating Hamas on the battlefield, you know, or even dismantling their operational structure.
Yes, but I've also noticed that the Hamas, it's called troop quality, hasn't really declined, if you will. The fighters are still shooting down the sights of their guns. They're still using sniper rifles. They're still. Like, even if it's a new guy firing that, who wasn't in Hamas, 3 months ago, firing that RPG at that tank, he's still hitting that tank.
Well, he's firing an RPG-7, right? I mean, these are mid-20th century weapons, both for technological and for, you could call them maybe ideological reasons, developed by the Soviet Union to be operable by goat herders, right? Like, that's the idea.
Yes, but historically, before this war, really, maybe Syria, how you pronounce it, you measure it, that didn't actually quite pan out because these fucking dumb Arabs would just like blind fire around corners and shit. Yeah. And wherever Allah wants that round to go, it's going to go. But here's my take is all the current crop of kids joining Hamas have been playing Counter-Strike for, seriously, that shit's big. Like, shooter games are so big that we have culturally imparted the need to aim down your fucking sights.
Through Call of Duty and Counter Strike and all the manner murders, of whatever,
yes. Like the use of the sights is like now key, right? And that was a thing like that used to be like in like relatively prestigious Arab military units. This used to be like concept you could like train to. Yeah.
But now
like,
any
the
kid
actual...
playing Counter Strike at an internet cafe.
It used to be the actual king of Jordan was the one who knew how to aim down his sights in the Middle East, and that gave the Jordanians a massive military advantage. Now it's every little kid who's parents get horrifyingly murdered by
right
Hamas. So
yeah, so it's in any case, bottom line is heartening news really everywhere. I mean, this is all. I think we are firmly in gears of history.
We're so back
turning territory, and
I can't wait till Kamala taxes the billionaires.
Yeah, like that's the other thing. We have great news on like your personal house that you personally own, you the government will take 25% of your equity every year.
Yeah.
But only if you're a billionaire. So
yeah, if your net worth is over $100 million,
yeah,
you might get taxed a little more. Oh,
oh
god.
God.
But the funny thing is that this is actually a thing that has been like not even it's been like a no duh thing in even like not conservative because they're retarded, but like moderate to mainstream economics is that there's this thing billionaires get to do because they have so much fucking money and it's all in assets, right? It's not in cash. Billionaires traditionally are. Traditionally, before, like, say, 1950, would be actually relatively cash poor. Like, they have to sell shares of Ford to buy, to donate money to the whatever, build a thing. Now, and by now, I mean, like, from the 50s, you could take a loan out against shares in your company. And because your company is so large and you're a billionaire, say you need a loan for, like,
and
20...
And the stock market grows, so the value of your debt relative to the asset that it's secured by decreases, right? So, in other words, your debt stays the same, but the asset securing it increases in value. Yes.
And effectively, like, the dividends and things pay... Effectively, this is debt. You just get cash from a bank. It pays itself off effectively, but because it's a loan you took out...
It's not income.
It's not income. It's not even cash. It's like actually
in fact,
against
it's a liability.
It's on the opposite side of your balance
and
sheet.
And if you structure it right, it's a business expense.
Yes. So this has been relatively exploited mercilessly. That's how every billionaire spends their money, right? When you see Warren Buffett,
well,
saying,
that's how they pay their monthly.
Pay less
that's how they pay their monthly bills.
Yes.
Is by taking out a loan against their assets.
Yes, and it's just totally fine, and everyone's been okay with this. This is how Warren Buffett's like, oh, I pay less taxes to my secretary. Blah 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 blah. It's because like they were all doing this. This should have been closed literally forever ago, and now it is like kind of half-ass closed because.
Well, to be clear, cool. I don't actually think she's going to do that, or you know, whoever. Like, obviously, Trump is you know going to do the opposite, but I don't think there's any danger of the Jews backing Doug Emhoff and his whore to be president of the United States are going to like voluntarily give up. Any percent of their unrealized gains, like, please.
I think it's possible. I have a little more. Yeah, I think the thing is they are to some degree like building themselves a like they're walling themselves in on this, right? They're not backing down on it.
Well, the
like,
base really want. I mean, this is the thing they've been talking about.
I really want
forever.
This.
Yeah, no, me
well,
too.
Well, actually,
I'm sure it would poll at like 60%+.
Yeah,
maybe
and
70.
And the Republicans are doing their same bit with the death tax, where they lie and say it's going to affect a normal person. Yeah. Like the death tax never affected normal people.
It was like 12 million was the limit or something. Yeah,
yeah. Yeah. If your estate was worth less than that, you did not.
And they're like, oh god, they got farmers and the land is valued. Just shut the fuck up. Just shut the fuck up.
Like, yeah, you're fucking. You're $30 million.
Yeah, because
farm,
because
as if you're,
like, changing the estate tax is how you fix farm policy in the United States. Just shut the fuck up.
It's brutal. It's brutal. And I bet, you know, I guarantee you, because it's the U.S. government, there was a farmland exemption in that. I would almost...
you could only ever...
Yeah.
Like, I'm sure. Yeah. Like,
or productive...
Whatever. You know, if you own a business, but it's not, you know, something like...
Yeah.
Look, there are ways... These are not complicated problems. These are problems that have been solved before. It's just we live in a system run by... Like, I guess the reason for my cynicism underlying all of it is yeah, because the existence of billionaires entails that they are actually the ones running the government, right? Like, yeah. If a state allows billionaires to exist, the billionaires are actually the ones running the state.
And I don't think everyone with a net worth over $100 million should be taxed at 25% on unrealized gains. My actual position is that that's my public position, if you will.
Yeah.
My private position is they should be tortured to death. But right. That's just, you know, like...
See, I'm a big brain centrist. I'm a moderate. I just think there should be, like, a limit... No, or maybe you could say like a billion plus, you could be tortured to death. 250 million is the actual wealth limit. Everything else belongs to the state, held in public trust. Like you can have $250 million, you cannot have more. Something like that, or 100 million. Fuck, I don't know. I'm just saying. Like we could sort this out. What you know, we could sort this. Reasonable people can come to a reasonable agreement on what is like the maximum permissible. Amount of
I
wealth.
Think it should go back. So I like public trust. I think it should go back to your employees. Like your business has become a co-op. Your business is worth $100 million. It's now a co-op.
Yeah, I like that.
You know, just cool. So also because, you know, you're paying into guys who, you know, in theory have made you all this surplus value.
That's basically, I mean, they're like, you know, the Catholicsburg is listening to, that's distributism. I mean, that's kind of true. It is that.
Yeah, but it's not cringe.
True. Yes, we do everything based and explicitly and intentionally anti-Semitic.
When I'm doing when I'm doing anti-Semitic Marxist nationalism, it's different than when you do it, Catholics. Sorry.
Okay, I think.
It's more like a wordplay, but have I given you my pitch for a movie? Okay, it's America. It's a terrorist group that does terrorism in order to get, like, an advocacy of national health care called National Healthcare Moss.
Okay.
Because I was wondering, what's the most, like, good optics terrorism a person could do? Like, people, what could you actually do a terrorist act and have, like, maybe a majority of people being like, cool, that's okay, I'm okay with that because of your ideology? Mm-hmm. And I think national healthcare might be it. Like, you could probably do terrorism in America if you were doing it, like...
If you went to, like...
The bombs will not stop until...
Until people... Yeah. Know. Well, that's what I'm saying. If you went specifically to, like, there was a time... Now, HMOs were, I guess, more of, like, a 90s, early 2000s thing prior to Obamacare. But if you went to, I don't know, like... Like, medical collection agencies. Like, the people who collect...
No, I mean, any medical insurance company, frankly.
Yeah.
Like, I have no love for Blue Cross Blue Shield. Like, you know, like, if somebody was to do something like a terrorism to them,
I wouldn't give a shit. I would say,
yeah, no one.
But
would.
I would feel. I don't know that if they did it to Blue Cross Blue Shield specifically, I don't know that I would be like in my mind like, yeah. Like, if they went after the medical debt collectors, I would be like, yeah. You know what I mean?
Well, the thing is, okay, this is like one of those capitalism things though, where like those are all the same companies.
Right? No, no, no. I understand. Yeah, I'm just in my mind. I'm explaining my sort of
my
reaction. Like walking through how I would feel.
Yeah. And then the car bombs will not stop until we have national healthcare. You know, it's like people would actually be like,
no, people would be okay with people would be totally fine.
Yeah. Well, I guess, you know, people do the bit like, well, I don't like their methods, but, you know.
Was there anything else? Do we have any last words?
Not really. I want to do more video game stuff, but you know, it's time.
We'll have more video game stuff. We want to get back on our regular recording schedule to be able to talk more in depth about it. But until then, take care and stay safe, everybody.